The Work Lab podcast from Microsoft answers the questions that keep business leaders up at night. Like, how can I reinvent processes for the AI era, from customer service to sales to HR? How can I prepare for AI to fundamentally transform jobs, companies, industries, and the whole economy? Don't panic. Tune in. Each episode of Work Lab brings you the top experts, hard data, and actionable insights to help you future-proof your organization. Check out Work Lab, that's W-O-R-K-L-A-B, no spaces, on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Money for the Rest of Us, a personal finance podcast on money, investing, the economy, and why they matter. I'm your host, David Stein, and today is episode 23. It's titled Smart Beta. What is it, and what should you do about it? The term smart beta is an investment term that has really come in vogue in the last 5 to 8 years. And just the thing you need to know about investing is it's very trend-oriented. It's just like with fashion. Things come in favor, things go out of favor. And I've been in the investing world long enough to see this. An example of that is something called asset liability matching, which is where a pension plan has their liability, which is the promised benefits they're paying to their retirees. And they calculate the average life of those, of that liability, of those benefit. Let's say it's 20 years. So your average retiree will retire in 20 years. And so that's kind of the liability. And then they try to match the duration of the assets, particularly the bonds. If you listen to last episode 22, I talked about what duration was. So they try to match the duration of the assets and to the liabilities. And what's interesting about that, I had this pension plan in the 80s that did this. I'm sorry, not 80s, in the 90s they did this. And the way that they did this, they had to go out and hire a bond manager that ran a very, very long-term bond portfolio, about a 24-year duration bond portfolio, because their liabilities or these benefits that they were going to be paying the retirees, the duration of their liabilities was about 24 years. That was the theory back in the late 90s, and it's a very, very good theory. I mean, it worked, except that the idea is that as interest rates go up, the value of the liabilities goes down, but also the value of the assets. And I remember sitting with this pension committee, an investment committee, and they're like, and interest rates had gone up that year, and their bond portfolio was down probably 8 or 9%. And they're just like, what is this? Why is our bond portfolio falling? And the reality is they hadn't really bought in to the strategy. They liked it as long as interest rates were falling and their bond portfolio was returning 15 to 20% a year. But as soon as they started backing up, they didn't quite care for that. So we ended up shifting out of that strategy. And it wasn't something that I had brought to the table. They were already doing this asset liability matching when I first was hired by this pension plan. So we got rid of it. And then I didn't think about it again for another 10 years. And suddenly, pension plans were talking about asset liability matching again. And it came back in vogue. So smart beta is very similar. Now it's in vogue. But what's interesting about this particular trend is I think it actually has some legs, and I think it's applicable to your investment portfolio. To illustrate the concept, I'm going to tell you an experience I've had in the last week. Early last week, I went back to Ohio, where I grew up, I have family there, but I actually went to the town where I spent from age 2 through age 26. So I was there a long time. This town is called North College Hill. I went away for a couple years while I was in Mexico. I had a semester of college away, but most of my college was done there in Cincinnati. And North College Hill is about 10 miles north of Cincinnati. And so I was there a long time. This town was founded in 1910. And I believe my dad, my father was probably, I think he was born in this town. I'm pretty sure he was. So he spent his life in this town. He went to school there. When he got married to my mother, they were married here. When my father passed away, we had the funeral at the local church in this town. That's where the funeral of his grandparents were. That's where I was christened Catholic as a young child at the same church in the same town. But I haven't lived there since I was 26. So it's been about 20 years since I lived there. But I like to go back and visit it, and particularly to see what has changed and what hasn't changed. And so I've been observing this town from my earliest recollections were probably when I was 5. Now I'm in my 40s. So it's been 40 years I've been watching this town change. And businesses have come and gone. Hundreds of businesses have probably come and gone over the years. And I want to do a thought experiment. Think about if you went back to your hometown where you grew up and you were trying to predict what was going to change over the next 20 to 30 or 40 years. What would stay the same and what would change? How would you go about doing that? Well, there's a principle that I've mentioned before in earlier episodes, that it's easier to forecast what will not change than what will. And one of the great visionaries in the corporate world is Jeffrey Bezos. Here's a quote from him from a 2007 Harvard Business Review article. It was an interview. He says, "When I'm talking with people outside the company, there's a question that comes up very commonly: what's going to change in the next 5 to 10 years? But I very rarely get asked what's not going to change in the next 5 to 10 years. At Amazon, we're always trying to figure that out because you can really spin up flywheels around those things. A flywheel is in a factory. It's one of those huge, heavy metallic wheels that takes a lot of effort to get moving. But once it's going, there's some definite momentum there." And so Bezos is saying when they look at strategy, they do two things. They're asking what's not going to change. And then they plant seeds. They experiment. And we've talked about experiments in earlier episodes and just keep trying things. When they do an experiment, though, they obviously don't know how it's going to turn out, but they want to see, to make sure the experiment is something, it's an acorn that will grow into, if it's successful, into an oak. In other words, it's large enough to actually have an impact. So they're always experimenting. They're looking and trying to decide what's not going to change. And Nassim Nicholas Taleb has said in The Black Swan, he pointed out that, and actually he actually also mentioned this in his book, Anti-Fragile. I'll include both on the show notes so you can find the books. And he said the longer something has been in place, the more likely it will continue. And so we go back to our thought experiment where you go back to your hometown. And in fact, don't even go back in today. Go back 30 or 40 years and you're imagining the hometown where you grew up and you're forecasting what's it going to be like 40 years hence. And the easiest way to do that would be to first focus on what you think will not change and look at things that have been there the longest. For example, in my town, North College, and I'm not trying to pronounce it right, it's North College Hill. But if you know anyone from North College Hill, they pronounce it North College Hill. I have no idea why we do that, probably because we never learn to speak clearly. We mumble in Ohio. But we call it for NCH, for short, North College Hill. What has been there the longest? There's two things. On the busiest intersection in that town where Hamilton Avenue and Galbraith Road meet, there are four corners. And on three of those corners, there has been massive change. On one, there was a gas station. They tore it down. Now there's an office building. On the other corner, there was a bank. And you would think banks would be there for a long time. This was a major bank, PNC. And it's no longer there now. They built a Walgreens. On the other corner, there was a Shell gas station. It's no longer there in its original format. They tore it down, they rebuilt it, and they combined it with a McDonald's. But on the fourth corner, there is the original town cemetery. It has veterans of the U.S. American Revolutionary War there, and it hasn't left in hundreds of years. And if you go to the episode for episode 23, I have a picture of that cemetery. That's not going to change. North College Hill is landlocked. It's not expanding because there's other towns near it. More than likely, the road, the grids of the roads is not going to change. There is a house that was built in 1832 by Robert Carey, it's a white brick home. It has been there for hundreds of years. I think now it's a national historic site. That's not going to go anywhere if we forecast out 30 or 40 years. Those things are not going to change. In investing, beta is focused on things that are not going to change, beta and smart beta. And we'll contrast that with this term called alpha. Alpha measures a manager's excess return relative to the market. So beta is the market. Alpha is excess return. Now there's many in investing, there's many different forms of beta and alpha. We're using this particular definition, beta being market exposure, alpha being excess return. If we go back to my hometown of North College Hill, I've mentioned there's been hundreds of businesses there. And let's say I wanted to predict which of the hundreds of businesses over time would still be there 40 years later. There's actually only three. There is a bakery, the NCH Bakery. There is a music store, Buddy Rogers Music, sells instruments. And there's a third one, and now I don't remember what it was. But you got a bakery, a music store. Oh, there was a tailor. And I never would have thought 40 years later there would be a tailor. Now, these are three businesses in their original buildings. There's been some businesses that have switched, but three that were there. Now, let's say that I got rewarded for picking which of the three out of 100 businesses would survive. That would be challenging to do, but isn't that not what a manager, a stock manager does, an active stock manager? They're selecting which dozen, two dozen or three dozen of 1,000 companies are not only going to survive, but are going to thrive. And they're going to thrive and do better than the overall market. In other words, deliver alpha, excess return. Now, just going back to my hometown reminds me how hard that is. I never would have thought that the tailor would still be there. I mean, grocery stores have left, banks have left, restaurants have gone out. Well, restaurants don't surprise me so much. The bakery, interesting thing about bakery, I went over to the next town called Mount Healthy and tried to recognize businesses that were still there from when I was a child. The only one I could recognize that was still there was a bakery. There's some longevity, apparently, resiliency when it comes to bakeries. But adding alpha and excess return would be like trying to predict which of the hundreds of businesses in my hometown of North College Hill would survive over 30 to 40 years. It's very, very difficult to do. Now, beta would be focusing on what wouldn't change. In other words, I would predict that there will actually be some type of businesses there. I just don't know which one. Now, that's just like buying an index fund. An index fund is a passively managed vehicle that buys the entire market. And so instead of trying to predict which stocks are going to outperform the market, you buy the entire market. That's buying beta as opposed to trying to hire a manager to deliver alpha. Beta is focused on things that aren't going to change, that the economy will continue to grow, that corporations will, maybe some will come and go, but the largest and the best will continue to grow and deliver the returns. That is focusing on what's not going to change. That's beta investing.
Let me pause here to share some words from this week's sponsors.
If you've been using Mint to manage your finances, you know they shut down several months ago. Well, let me tell you about the budgeting solution, the financial tracking solution I've been using for the past number of months. It's Monarch Money. Monarch Money is the top-rated all-in-one personal finance app. It gives you a comprehensive view of all your accounts, investments, transactions, and more. You can create custom budgets like I've done. You can set goals, collaborate with your partner. And now you can get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/David. What I like about Monarch is the ability to customize what I want to see. I have custom budget categories, and then I can go on to the dashboard and see where I'm above trend on some of my spending. I especially like that Monarch will never sell your data to third parties or show you ads. After trying Monarch myself, I understand why it's the top-rated personal finance app. And right now, get an extended 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/David. That's monarchmoney.com/David for your extended 30-day free trial. We have a brand new sponsor to our show. It's Yahoo Finance. Yahoo's been around for decades. My first email outside of work was a Yahoo email address. But the financial side, I've used on occasion primarily to get data for dividend histories for particular funds or ETFs. But I was pleasantly surprised to get back on Yahoo Finance to see how it's evolved over the years. Now it's really a financial dashboard where you can get an understanding of what's going on with the markets. There are relevant articles from Bloomberg, Reuters, the Associated Press, and the Yahoo Finance team. You can look at the economic events calendar and see which data series are being released that day and what the consensus is. You can see the pulse of the markets at any time by going to Yahoo Finance. In addition, you could see all of your investments and retirement accounts in one place with Yahoo Finance. You get a consolidated view of multiple accounts. Yahoo Finance serves as a financial hub for your retirement accounts, but also comprehensive financial news and analysis. You need to check out Yahoo Finance, particularly if you haven't been there in a while. Check it out at yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com.
Now, what is smart beta? Well, think about how a typical index fund is constructed. They do the weights based on what is known as the market capitalization of the stocks or the companies. And in all the capitalization measure, it measures the price of a stock times the number of shares outstanding. So the more shares outstanding and the higher the price, the higher the capitalization. And that's how traditional index funds, the Vanguard S&P 500 index fund is based on, it's weighted, each company is weighted based on the capitalization. Why did they do that? Well, it's very, very, very liquid because the biggest companies have the largest weights. And so it's easy to get in and out of those positions. The second thing is it doesn't require any rebalancing. The only rebalancing that occurs is if new entrants to the particular index are added and others are dropped out. And whoever constructs the index makes those decisions. But once that's set in place, because the weight in the index fund is the same as the capitalization that, well, it naturally increases as the company's change, as their price changes. Now, that's, it's easy for an index fund, but when you think about, let's go back to my hometown in North College Hill. If I wanted to do an index fund of the companies, or just an index of the companies that exist there now, and I wanted to weight them in some proportion. Let's say, for example, they were publicly traded. None of them are. Well, I guess McDonald's is. But if I wanted to weight them within the town, how would I do that? Well, it would be more natural to weight them, let's say, based on sales. And we're gonna weight them based on who has the most sales and less sales. Or we could weight them based on if they paid a dividend. And so whoever pays the most dividends, they would be at the top of the index. Whoever paid the less, we could do it based on some other measure. We could do it based on, we could look at their accounting statements and focus on their book value, which I won't describe for you, but you can look it up, book value, but that would be another way to weight it. All that smart beta is instead it constructs an index fund not based on capitalization, but based on some other way. It could be based on sales. It could be based on dividends. It could be it could be equal weighted. That would be another way to do smart beta. You just put every company gets the same weight. The problem with equal weighted is it gives up some of the benefits of capitalization, which is the larger companies are the most liquid, and so you want a higher weight there. Now, there's a gentleman by the name of Robert Arnott who came out with an article in 2005. He founded a firm called Research Affiliates. He's the one that came up with this idea called fundamental indexing. In other words, index not based on capitalization, but index based on fundamental weights, based on book value, based on sales, based on earnings. Those are all fundamental weights. And he constructed some index called fundamental indexing. There's another firm called Wisdom Tree that did the same thing. They've constructed index funds based on, they weight based on dividends. Research Affiliates index funds are available, at least in the US, are available through Schwab, but I believe that they're international. This concept of smart beta fundamental indexing has really gone international. Now, why does it matter? Why invest in a index fund that's based on fundamental weights? Well, it turns out that those indices actually outperform a cap-weighted index. And there's been a lot of criticism about them. Well, the reason why it outperforms is because it has more of a value tilt to it. And Arnott's written a bunch of articles. Well, no, that's not really it. But there's this ongoing debate. But here's an intuitive argument with why a fundamentally based index, something that the individual positions are weighted based on earnings or some other sales, is a better than cap weighted. Now, this is something that Rob Arnott pointed out. He says a typical cap-weighted index, if you assume every stock has its true value, what it should be worth. When you cap-weight an index, you get a number of stocks that tend to be overvalued. In other words, because it's cap-weighted, because there's a momentum aspect to markets, you can get stocks that end up being priced or valued more than what their true value should be if you base it on discounted cash flows or some other measure. Conversely, there will be stocks that are priced lower than what they theoretically should be or their true value. And he believes that's why these fundamental index actually deliver some excess return over a cap-weighted index. Now, the downside to cap-weighted index, because you're trying to get as high a correlation to, or the downside to a fundamentally weighted index is because you want it to be fairly highly correlated to a cap weighted index, but actually outperform over time, you do have to rebalance it more. Now, the bottom line is I, when I invest in stocks, I typically am not hiring an active manager. I don't want to hire somebody that is trying to deliver alpha or excess return because it is very, very difficult to do. And so, and I don't want to have my success based on predicting what's going to change, which companies are going to do well. I want my investment success to be dependent on what's not going to change, that capitalism will continue, that economies will grow over time. And so that's why I hold the market. Now I'll then use what's, again, smart beta. I'll use a fundamentally weighted index fund that's not weighting based on capitalization, but it's weighting on one of these other factors. Typically, maybe through Schwab or a Wisdom Tree, or there's other firms out there that do this. Just Google fundamentally weighted index or factor weighted index funds, and you can find ETFs and mutual funds that do this. And I do it ultimately because they outperform. Now, as we've talked about in episode 21, again, while I'll use these smart beta type index funds, I'm focused, again, not on averages. They have outperformed the averages over time, but my overall allocation is based on focusing on the extreme events and making sure I'm protected against extreme events that can occur. So that's smart beta, and that allows you to be smarter to know what that is, because it's one of those terms that sounds complicated, but really it's not. It's just fundamentally weighted index funds, ways to construct index funds that are not capitalization weighted. Now, there's one other index fund strategy that I want to share with you, and there's a fund called the PIMCO Stock Plus Fund that's been around for many years. And this strategy is what's known as portable alpha. And the Stock Plus strategy, I'm not recommending it because I don't recommend investments, but it's an example of a portable alpha strategy. And all that is when a manager gets exposure to the specific benchmark, such as the S&P 500, but they'll get that exposure by buying futures in the index or a swap on the index. In other words, some type of derivative security. And the reason why they do that is when you can get $1,000 worth of exposure to the S&P 500 index by buying a futures contract, but it doesn't take very much money to do that. It just takes dollars instead of $1,000. And now it's highly levered. But then what the manager does is takes the other $995 and goes out and invests it in some other asset class, such as fixed income or into hedge funds. And the theory is if they do this, they get exposure through a futures contract. Then they, when it only takes a little bit of the assets, they invest the bulk of the other assets in a fixed income strategy or a hedge fund. And if they can get a high enough return on that fixed income strategy or on that hedge fund strategy so that the return is higher than the embedded cost in the futures contract. In other words, there's always a short-term interest rate that factors in to the return of futures. And I won't get into detail because it can get quite complicated. But all you need to know is if they can earn 3 or 4% on those bonds, or 5 to 6% on the hedge fund, then they will return the S&P 500, if that's a specific benchmark, plus 3 to 5%. In other words, there's alpha there. That's why it's called portable alpha, because you're porting alpha from some other strategy, such as bond or hedge fund, and you're layering it on top of the S&P 500 index. And that's why it's called portable alpha. It's kind of an interesting strategy. Now, in the U.S., the Stock Plus strategy that PIMCO runs, and they've run it for years. In fact, they have a closed-end fund. And this is an example where closed-end funds, and you go back, I believe it's episode 18, investment vehicles. I talked about what closed-end funds are and how they can sell at huge premiums or huge discounts to the underlying value of the assets. And the stock plus closed-end fund that PIMCO runs is selling at about a 40 to 50% premium. There's no way it should be doing that. It's an example of a huge inefficiency of the market. But that's just a little bit of trivia. That is a portable alpha strategy. There's other ones out there, and they can be quite effective to get a exposure to a particular asset class, but to do it in a more consistent way to deliver alpha, because there it's not through stock selection. So you're not hiring an active manager to outperform, pick the best stocks in the S&P. You're simply trying to have a manager that can outperform short-term bond rates. And if it's structured right, it can be done. And so it's a more effective way to deliver alpha. So that is episode 23. You can get show notes for this episode at moneyfortherestofus.net. That's also where you can sign up for my insider's guide. I'll email you those show notes. That's where I'm answering questions that listeners send in every week. For example, this past week, in the insider's guide, there was a question on precious metals and precious metals. Gold and silver is falling dramatically. Why was that? I answered that in that insider's guide. So it's a way that I can have a dialogue with you. You can reply back to me. So please sign up for that at moneyfortherestofus.net. If you have a question, please email me. You can email me at jd@jdavidstein.com. I wanted to read a review. I've not done that for a while. Thank you, everyone that has left reviews on the podcast. I'm reading this review because I think he brings up a great point. This is from New York Investor 22. He says, I subscribed last week and listened to two of the most recent episodes. It was so good that I've gone back and started at episode one and listened in chronological order. I recommend doing this because David will briefly review something in, say, episode two to give you context, and then spend half or a full future episode diving in deeper to that same theme. I actually think I'll be listening to all the episodes again once I finish. I'm on number six now. This is such a refreshing look at the economy and how it affects us. Thanks for creating such a great podcast. I've had a number of listeners that re-listen to podcasts, and now we're up to 23 episodes. So one of the things I'm going to be doing is putting together podcast packs or playlists. So because there are certain podcast episodes that kind of go together. And so I'm putting together a resources page. On that resources page, though, I'll have some of these podcast triplets or podcast packs where you say, well, you know, here's a theme and here's the episodes that I want to re-listen to. Because it's hard to listen to all 23 again. But I admit, I listen to old episodes on my own podcast just to remember what I said. And sometimes, honestly, when I was driving up to Cleveland the other day, I'm like, wow, I can't believe I said that or I learned something. So that's the episode for the day, episode 23. Just remember, everything I've shared with you in this podcast is for general education only. I've not given you specific investment advice. I've not considered your situation. So please consider it only general education on money, investing, and the economy. Next episode, episode 24, if you have a suggestion for it, email me, jd@jdavidstein.com. Thanks.